for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with our weekly look at the world of non-league football. We begin this week with another manager riding the crest of a wave of a couple of very busy seasons. In the first season of Step 4, he's now got his club in pole position, and with a game away this weekend to the club that are second to them in the division and also have a game in hand, it's looking very tasty as the season draws to a close. Dave McNabb, manager at Warrington Rylands, is back on the show to chat about the continued success of the club, both on and off the field. Next up, a man who's already celebrated winning promotion and a title this season, but he's got more in his sights as he aims for the magic centenary points mark before he readies his club for Step 2 football next term. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show Banbury United boss Andy Wing. And with much going on, we round off the show with an extended piece with executive editor at the Non-League paper, Mr. John Couch, as the season begins to get very exciting and slightly political too. Plenty to come. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So it is the business end of the season up and down the land, and whilst we report on sides here and there wrapping up titles early on, the majority of divisions are locked in battle, with anyone from, what, 2, 3, 4, even 5 still in with the shout of the title and playoff dreams still alive for countless more. So a big games across the country this weekend, but perhaps none more so than the Step 4 and Northern Premier West. Workington host Warrington Rylands, with the visitors currently top of the table, but their hosts just a point behind and with a game in hand. A pressure game, but then our guest knows all about them. It's a warm welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Manager at Warrington Rylands, Mr. Dave McNabb. Welcome back, Dave.
Hi, Tim. You okay?
I'm good, mate. A pressure game. What I've learned from our exchanges last year during your Vars run promotion season, even if you feel it, you hide the stress and strains of management and big matches very well. Are you going to now tell me that you're like the Tasmanian devil when you're locked in your own bathroom to combat it all?
No, look, I think obviously we've been in these positions before. We've come into big games, and I think that definitely helps in terms of growing your experience, how to deal with them. I think for me as a manager, obviously I'm different, but I get a little bit more sort of worried and nervous and stressed out in the lead up to sort of the last training session, making sure we've got everything right, making sure the team selection, the setup, the sessions that we've gone into is right. And then once we've sort of decided what team and how we're going to play sort of Thursday night, after that, it's almost like a little bit of a calm before the storm, because you feel like you've done everything now, and you sort of handed the baton over to the players then, and ultimately it's down to them to perform in terms of on the pitch.
And there is, as a manager, there is only so much you can do, isn't there? After the FA Vars win at Wembley, that promotion from the North West Counties League, it's certainly been a raised profile of the club. Has that maybe added to the pressure, maybe not on you, but maybe on the players?
Possibly. I think, obviously, anyone going to Wembley, you're feeling the pressure of playing it in the national stadium. It's pretty much what everyone dreams about. And obviously, the circumstances were a little bit unique. We're coming out of the pandemic. We played, you know, all the games leading up to the final behind closed doors. So it was a little bit more pressurised for both teams in terms of, you know, giving a little bit back to our family and friends who pretty much sacrificed a lot sort of at the back end of the pandemic when we started to come back and playing football. But, you know, this game's no other. Obviously, the profile's raised at the club, and I think the work that goes on behind the scenes of the club, we very much deserve that. But I don't think there's any additional pressure. You know, we said that we wanted to try and scrape into the playoffs and see where it takes us. We've achieved that, so anything above that is a bonus. So we're going to go into Saturday and hopefully try and win the game.
Yeah, the raise in the profiles has certainly been good, no doubt, in helping you bring in players. You know, players that I've been, you know, seeing come in recently for you. Paddy Lacey, one notable signing back in February. You know, most recently at Chester, but I'm sure most of our listeners probably know him from his time at Barrow, if not elsewhere. And I saw you brought Steve Irwin also in from Rivals Marine just before the deadline. You've now got a great mix of experience in that dressing room as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think, look, there's two elements. Obviously, you're looking for those experienced players who've encountered situations like this before where they've gone on and, you know, won promotions or played in high-pressure cup finals, those type of things. You're looking for them to try and help out the some of the younger players. And to be fair, the players that we've tried to bring in, the likes of Paddy and Stevie, you've mentioned, Dean Furman as well, John Hunt, they're not just good players. They're brilliant people to have in and around the club in the changing rooms, and they've added a lot to the group. On the flip side of that, we've got some young players, you know, the likes of your Kane Drummond, your Andy Scarisbricks, James Neal, those players who, you know, they are young, and with that comes an element of fearlessness as well. So I do think we've got a good balance. We've got a good squad. We're really happy with the group. The massive credit to them for putting themselves into this position, and hopefully we can, you know, do that justice sort of on Saturday with a good performance and hopefully the 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, much credit must go to that squad as well, because success can be a double-edged sword. You know, it's easy to slip and be slow starters on the back of a season like you had last year, and you got into the groove quite quickly, really, at the higher level. Now back only last month, you celebrated your 100th win in charge. I think that was an impressive 7-0 win over Market Drayton Town, who had just been relegated, but you've got to win all these games. And I think that since then, another 2 wins in the league. So my calculation, 102 wins from 142 games, and that gives you a win ratio now of 72%. I recall you saying, I think when you and Fraser Ablett, your number two, signed those 2.5-year deals at the end of 2000, you said that your goal was to keep winning games. Looks like you've kept up your part of that bargain.
Yeah, and look, I think hitting the 100 wins was a really good chance to reflect on what we've achieved as a club, I think, since coming in, since myself and Fraser came in. You don't generally spend a lot of time sort of looking back and looking at your successes, because your focus is always on what's coming ahead. And I think naturally the personalities that we both are, and a lot of the personalities at the club, to be fair, are around, it's still not good enough, we want more. And I think that's probably part of the reason why we're so driven. But yeah, it was nice to reflect on sort of performances. And, you know, when you do think of 100, you do try and think back of some of the memorable ones. And obviously the Vars win is the biggest. But, you know, you think about your first away game where you got the coach, you know, and the camaraderie, the group, and there's loads of little things to celebrate within there. So it's a massive achievement for myself and for everyone at the club.
Yeah, and talking about having Fraser alongside you, we always talk about that, how the assistant manager for a manager sort of work together as a team. I guess having Fraser, the rest of your coaching side alongside you, when you've got such a, you've got the cut and thrust of the season, particularly at the moment, you know, game after game coming, it's got to be easier to be able to have someone to lean on or bounce off that you've known for a while. I mean, does he second guess you? Is he always the one that's challenged you? How does that dynamic work with you two?
I think I've got a really good relationship with Fraser. I've known him for a long time. We were sort of playing, you know, sort of when I was going to end my career, I was playing with Fraser, and we've kept in touch as sort of coaches since then. And then obviously when the opportunity came up around, he was the first person I wanted him to come in and be the assistant. And you know, the dynamic is different, and we've both got our own sort of personalities. We've both got our own way of doing things. Sometimes that, you know, does cause friction in a positive way, and sometimes we do 100% agree with each other. But Fraser, as well as the rest of the coaching staff, absolutely know that it's their job to raise things and put their opinions out there, and ultimately it's my accountability to make the final decision. But the group know very well that they can raise those concerns or their thoughts and feelings, and we're open to discuss them. I think the last thing you want around you is yes men and you know, people who are just going to agree with what you've said, because I just don't think it challenges you, and I don't think it allows you to improve as a manager and as a person as well.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the most successful people that we get to talk to on the show, there's always that element that they're open to challenge, they're open to criticism, and it's working. It's a bit like any other relationship, I guess, isn't it? There has to be some give and take, and it's clearly working for you guys. What are you, unbeaten in 9 now, 8 wins on the bounce going into this massive game this weekend? You know, you mentioned it there, Workington. They won midweek to close that gap to a point, and they've still got that game in hand, but it does mean that with this game this weekend, your fate's technically in your own hands.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, sort of going back to the start of the run that you're talking about, we were very much just concentrating on trying to secure that playoff place. And full credit to the players. I think the way they responded and the performances, because in that run, like you said, we've had some really good performances in terms of where we played really well. You know, the one that's at Old Trafford at home. Obviously, you've had a really good scoreline in the 7-0 at Market Drayton. We've had to play away and win ugly as well on challenging surfaces. Obviously, with the weather when it changed, it was really hot. You know, Ramsbottom away was a really tough game in that period. Then we've had to play Runcorn Linnets, who were sort of second in their form guides as well on Saturday. So we've had some incredibly tough games in that run as well. And the, like I said, full credit to the players. They've been exceptional.
Yeah, and as ever in these sorts of first v second games, we're always looking at stats, how we can separate the two sides. But Workington, yeah, they're also unbeaten in their last six. I think it's only you guys that have got a better home record than them in the division. There's little to separate you two. So yeah, maybe the 2-1 win in the reverse fixture back in October, does that give you any psychological benefit?
I don't think so. The game back in October, the weather was appalling. It was really, really tough conditions. And the first half, we spent pretty much defending against the wind, and it was tough. And Workington were probably a little bit unlucky to come in at 0-0. And then second half, we've sort of scored two in quick succession around the hour mark. And I thought we looked really comfortable. And then we've conceded a bit of a sloppy goal where we've switched off. And then after that, Workington, the last 10 minutes, it really was nail biting stuff. And I'm sure they were probably disappointed not to come away with at least a point. But, you know, from our point of view, we defended really well. And, you know, I don't think it plays a massive part. I think both teams are probably stronger than what they were then in terms of the squad and in terms of the league position as well. And look, Workington are a fantastic side, and fair play to them because they've been so consistent all season. They had to deal with an awful lot of injury issues at the start of the season. We've had probably three different spells, probably smaller spells than what Workington had to deal with initially, where we've had really bad injuries and knocks and, you know, struggling to get 13 players to a game. But, you know, that's part and parcel of playing through a 40-week season. It is tough and you do get different challenges, but, you know, we've asked players to play out of position. We've have to ask players to play with knocks or when they're returning, you know, and having to play a little bit ahead of time, ideally. But they've always responded really well. So we're made up with the group, and obviously Saturday is a showcase game that I just hope that we can go there and do ourselves justice.
Yeah, you do find yourself going into this game, though, top of the table. You were saying about trying to sneak into the playoffs. There's such a fine margin between being title winners and ultimately, yeah, potentially playoff misery this season. If it were to be the playoffs, you're saying that like 40-week season, have your guys got enough in the tank to push them through and you know, if it were the playoffs, to lift themselves for those for that final push?
Yeah, I think it would be tough. I mean, you know, from a psychological point of view, obviously when you put yourself into a position where, you know, you've been on the run that we have and we put ourselves where it's back into our own hands, you know, if we were to obviously lose Saturday or not win the game Saturday or drop points elsewhere, which is no point at a given in this league, I think obviously you would be very disappointed in trying to lift yourself back up for a Tuesday turnaround would be very difficult. But from the other side of it, I think we've achieved what we set out to achieve this season so far. So, you know, you could look at it another way and say, you know, the team, a team that's been top for, you know, half of the season, if they didn't win the league and then they had to go to the playoffs, that could be, you know, an even bigger psychological advantage or disadvantage. So, I don't know. There's different ways to look at it. And ultimately, all we can do is prepare the players best we can. And we know that they're a mentally strong group. We know that they've been through adversity, both in games and through spells of the season this year. You know, a big chunk of them have played in that FA Vars final. And look, we think they're a great group. You know, we're really happy with each of them, not just as players, but as individuals as well. And I'm pretty sure that no matter what happens between now and the end of the season, if we are in the playoffs, then they would definitely be up for it and definitely give 100% for me and the club to to try and get promoted that way.
Yeah, a great bunch of lads on the field, your coaching staff as well, but you've touched upon it as well. It's the club as a whole, isn't it? I mean, much has been made of Paul Stretford's ownership, the club, the aspirations. I mean, promotion at every available opportunity since you've come in there. FA Vars win at Wembley. You're living up to expectations, certainly on the field, but it's not just the first team, because it's the community that's being built off the field. Do you set up Chairman Mark Pye is sort of guiding other elements of success of the club, and that's important as well to help you continue that success on the field.
It's massive. It's pivotal. Without the backing of the club, and I don't just mean sort of for the first team and that type of stuff. It, the backing of the club in terms of the environment that they create an environment that allows me to go and do my job to the best of my ability. It gives the players a sense of feeling of part of a family, enjoyment. They feel at home. You know, players walk through the door and they feel like they've been at the club for 5 years. And I think that's something that's a little bit special. And obviously, I know other clubs will say that they've got the same thing, but I can only really talk to you about our club. And everyone who's part of it does actually feel part of it. It does feel like it's their club. And again, a big part of that's the community aspect. You know, we've got, I think around about 400 kids playing as part of Ryland's under 28 different teams. So, you know, the club's really, really growing, and, you know, hopefully we can continue that and engage even more with the community and get more people through the gate. And obviously, hopefully the first team can then put a little bit back as well and help those sort of young players and give them aspirations, put coaching sessions on and everything else that brings us together as a community as well as just as a football club.
Yeah, it is all about creating that environment, that buzz that you can't always put your finger on it, but it does make a difference. So you've obviously got a very busy weekend ahead, a busy few weeks with the last few games as well. But we spoke to Dave Challoner at Stockport last week, who's, like yourself, has had an equally busy couple of years in management, and asked him if he'd actually got a family holiday on the horizon this summer. Any downtime plans for yourself once this season does come to an end? It's been a hectic couple years for you.
Yeah, so I think from the end of the season, obviously we'll take a little bit of time and recuperate, and I'm actually getting married in May, so we fly off to get married in May, so it'll probably be a bit more of a busier time than would I'd ideally like, but you know, I'm looking forward to that family wedding, family holiday away. So
well, hopefully lots of celebrations then come the end of April, start of May in the McNabb household. Dave, always a pleasure to speak to you. We're always thankful for the time that you give us. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Best of luck at the weekend. We'll speak to you again soon.
Cheers. Thank you very much. See you soon.
So let's speak to a man who's already wrapped up promotion, indeed sealed the title in the Southern League Premier Central. Banbury United are heading into the National League for the first time in their history, I believe. And I'm pleased to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, manager at Banbury, Mr. Andy Wing. Welcome back, Andy.
Hi, mate. You okay?
I'm good. I mean, I imagine you are as well, because I think it was October 2020. I think we last had you on. You'd taken on the job in May of that year, and you just helped Banbury into the first round of the FA Cup for the first time in decades. Since then, you've made the first round of the FA Cup this season too, and now you've won the title and promotion, a relative canter, really. Have you had time to assess everything this week now that the title's secure?
Obviously, yeah, like you say, it's been a fantastic sort of 2 years that I've been in the role. Obviously, the first season was, I think, it was brilliant for me, just to get obviously used to the league, used to the players, the club, what we had in the building, and I used the sort of time where obviously the season was cut short after what 30, I think we played 13 games. You know, we used that time really well, to be fair, and the club did as well. We had a lot of Zoom meetings and how we can kind of, you know, because we haven't got the biggest budget in the league, how can we kind of bridge the gap? How do we get as close to the top of the league or to playoffs as possible? And you know, we've done that in great success, and we've had you know, an unbelievable achievement this season.
Yeah, and you say success after that first season. There's a lot of clubs that were doing well in those curtailed seasons that then that for some reason that they just it just didn't gel when this season got underway, and it didn't work for them. Whereas you're pretty much been there from day one. You hit the ground running and you have taken this title, 4 weeks from the end of the season?
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, we had a bit of a decent sort of overhaul in the squad in the summer. Just thought we needed a bit more like athleticism in the squad, probably needed to bring the age down a little bit. And we've done that really well. We wanted to keep a small, like a team together. I know a lot of teams, you know, especially with the ones with bigger budgets, seem to be bringing players in every other week and chopping and changing the team. And I don't think you can get, you know, the sort of the shape of the team. You can't, you know, how you want to play across to everybody in short bursts, really. And wanting to kind of, consistency has been absolutely massively key for us in terms of players playing, in terms of how we go about playing. The start of the season, Peterborough Sports and Cobra were absolutely flying, to be fair to them. And, you know, we were winning games week after week, and we're still like 7 or 8 points behind. It was really frustrating. But then around November, sort of Christmas time, you know, we hit the ground running. We beat Coville and Peterborough Sports in about 2 weeks of each other. And then we kind of went on a run there and broke away a little bit. So, yeah, as I say, consistency has been key with us. You know, everything we've done this season, you know, there's been a consistent message, consistent players playing, and it's been great for us.
And, yeah, obviously, I mentioned that FA Cup success earlier on this season. TV game against Barrow. It could have easily gone wrong, couldn't it? I mean, it does so well for my own club, Hayes and Yedding. Yeah, we took a noticeable dip once out of the FA Cup this season. I look at Boreham Wood in the National League. They reached a third round, played Everton. They haven't won in seven games. They've even got the risk of missing out on the playoffs now. But your guys, though, you stayed on the rails, and it almost like spurred you on. You continued picking up points and extending your lead at the top of the table.
Yeah, well, I think last season's experience, that helps us, because it really did contact. Well, it really affected our league form. So when we played the FA Cup game, you know, we'd get beat the next game, and that was pretty much, that was it. And we, you know, we ended the league season then like 17th. I know we'd only played 7 or 8 games, we were 17th, 18th, but that FA Cup kind of derailed our start of the season then. So I think we learnt a lot from last year. I think we played Rushall Olympic after the Barrow game, you know, all the highs, and, you know, that kind of goes under the radar, really, how what a fantastic achievement that was again to get to the first round. But we went and won on the Tuesday night. We went and won 1-0. It was a tough game. Rushall are a decent team. And it was a really tough, and we went and won 1-0. I think that bouncing back really, really quickly helped. You know, we reiterated to players, you know, this is our bread and butter. Forget about what's gone on before. You know, let's go and try and win the league or get as high as we can in the league. And that's been brilliant for us, to be fair. I think that experience last year definitely helped this season.
I'm looking at the table here, and I remember a good friend, a successful manager, once told me that being hard to beat is what wins your titles, not necessarily winning the games, or you've done both, you've got to get the points on the board. But I'm looking at that defeat column, only 2 defeats in the league this season. That's got to be a massive, big foundation stone in the success of your season, even if it's only psychological.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at most of our games, they've always been decided with 1 goal or 2 goals in it. A lot of games we've been behind and we've come back to win 2-1, especially recently, or sort of in that period around Christmas time where we're grinding results out. You know, 60, 70 minutes, it's 0-0, and then we've scored 2 goals in the last 10, 15 minutes to go and win games. We did that quite a lot. Our defensive record, as you see at the league table, and the goals, goal difference has been fantastic. We haven't conceded many.
28 goals in 36 games. I mean, that's very impressive stuff. I'm guessing that's a lot of hard work on a Thursday evening at a training session.
Yeah, absolutely. And good players. You know, we've got, you know, a 37-year-old, you know, ex-professional footballer, Calvin Langmead, who's, you know, he's experienced and, you know, he'd say himself, he's probably not the quickest guy. He probably wasn't when he played in the Football League, but even more so now. But he just reads the game so well. And we've had a lot of issues, to be fair, defensively in terms of injuries. But we've always had, you know, 4 or 5 players who are pretty consistent. When we've bought players in, we've gone like for like. You know, we lost our captain to Hemel Hempstead earlier in the season, Jack Westbrook. And we then, Jay Williams was our number one target. They played pretty much the same. And he's been absolutely fantastic as well. So we've got two really good goalkeepers. Jack Harding dislocated his elbow halfway through the season. You know, our sub goalkeeper Ben Taylor come in and done fantastic for 20 games as well. So whenever there's been an injury, someone's come in and done exactly the same job. And, you know, defensively, and even from the front, you know, I want strikers or wingers or number 10 to work their absolute socks off. And they've done that as well. So we press from the front, and that's helped, you know, take the pressure off the back five or six as well. So, you know, it's massively a team performance.
Yeah, and it almost it seems like going back to basics, but that working your socks off thing, on and off the field, when we see clubs that are successful and they, you know, more than just like one season where they have a good run, you know, that clubs that are building successfully, it's because you've got a lot of people working hard off the field. And, you know, the club as a whole has been on the rise for a while now. And I think it's, 7 years since the club were relegated down to step four. And it's been a rise built on and off the field. And I think that was probably something that influenced you in going for the job. But a supporter-owned club, it does seem to go from strength to strength.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, 7 years ago, they got relegated to step four. Obviously, dark days for the club then. You know, a group of supporters got together and, you know, a lot of problems with, like, previous owners and stuff. So they've gone to a community-based sort of, obviously, supporters-owned football club 6-7 years ago. And they haven't looked back since, really. Obviously, Mike Ford's come in and done a fantastic job getting the team promoted. You know, I think when he left, only just sort of when the COVID come, it was just outside the playoffs as well. So, you know, the team has been on the up, you know, and that's, you know, down to the dedication of volunteers and obviously those supporters who set that up, you know, the sponsorship and what they've done with the ground. And, you know, we were about averaging 400 when I first come in. Now we're averaging over 1,000since Christmas. We've got 1,800 up there, over 1,800 on Saturday. Probably over 2,000 in the last game against Dalchurch we'll get. So the club's been on the up, and that's due to them supporters who have, took over the football club. There's no one owner. There's no sort of beneficiary who's pumping loads of money in. You know, it's a collective feel, community feel about the place, and it's great that everyone's, you know, had a part to play in it, really.
Yeah, does that make it easier for you to concentrate on the field as well? Because, you know, pretty much everybody's got almost like a bigger interest in everything going well. So there's not... Do you still get the backbiting that you get elsewhere? Maybe, I suppose when you're doing well, it's not so obvious. But do you feel that everybody's pushing in the same direction?
Yeah, absolutely. I think every club has their moments. Every club has their disagreements about how they go forward, but you know, we've got a fantastic board, we've got a fantastic group of volunteers, a fantastic kind of people who volunteer, you know, to get sponsorship or in and around the football club, and everyone's on the same page. Everyone wants to get this club, as high as they can. I don't think anybody would have expected it to be probably this quickly or to have got promoted in the fashion and to be in the last two first round of the FA Cups in the last 2 years. So, you know, it's gone actually amazingly well, but it's a lot due to a lot of hard work from a lot of people all pulling in the same direction. Otherwise, if there's people going in different directions, you've got no chance. And, you know, luckily we've all been singing off the same hymn sheet.
Yeah, and I asked if you had time to reflect, but getting the title and promotion so early, does that actually give you a head start on your preparations for next season going into step two?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it does it in terms of bringing in players, obviously, because they're going to be elsewhere. Obviously, we don't know about contracts at the end of the season, so it probably wouldn't in terms of obviously bringing in players. It'll get us a head start in tying down our own players, hopefully. Hopefully we'll keep the vast majority of the squad because they've been absolutely fantastic, and the whole reason I bought them at the football club is they want to go further. They want to progress their careers further. In terms of now we can have a look at different formations, different systems. Obviously we can go out and watch games. We've been doing that last few weeks now. We've been watching games in National League North, which it looks like we're going to go into.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big jump. There's a lot of big clubs in there. You know, the tempo looks extremely higher than probably our league at the moment. So there's a lot of work to be done, but we can certainly start planning now.
And at the moment, you're part-time. Are there plans to go full-time when you go up to that next level? You say some massive clubs that you'd be taking on, particularly if you were to go in National North.
Yeah, I don't think we're anywhere near getting to full-time status at the minute. I think the club are only just about to appoint their first ever full-time staff member. I think we're trying to recruit a general manager to help, obviously, off the pitch and sort of non-footballing matters. So in terms of full-time, I think we're way off that. But at least, you know, with this sort of first sort of full-time member of staff we're going to get in, you know, hopefully he or she can go and push the club further. And, you know, hopefully we can stabilise in the next couple of years and see where it takes us.
Yeah. You've secured promotion, you've secured the title. You think it looks like you probably will be National North next year, so you can sort of maybe get that in your hip. You've still got four games to go, though, haven't you? Three away games, that Easter Monday game at home that you mentioned. You're on 90 points at the moment. Is the 100 point barrier the next target?
Yeah, massively. I mean, it's not big time or anything like that. You know, if they think they are, you know, it's our next target. We respect every opposition we're going to play against. You know, every single team we're playing against seems to have got something to play for. So we have to go. You know, we've only got 15, 16 players anyway, so it's not like we can drastically change what we do. But we'll just do what we usually do. We'll try and win every game of football, and it'll be a remarkable achievement if we can get to 100 points, and that's definitely our next target.
Well, I think, you know, as you say, we're not having the biggest budget, the squad that you've got, and, you know, being community run, I think it's a remarkable achievement anyway. And, you know, I've certainly known Mark Alec, the commercial director up there for a while, and the great work that he's put in there. And it's certainly brought a smile to my face. On Saturday afternoon, you ended up having to wait for the Colville result to come through before you could celebrate. I'd imagine a fairly lengthy evening, though, last Saturday.
Absolutely. Well, luckily, I think Coville finished 7 minutes before us. So we've had 7 minutes to go in our game. The news filtered through that Coville drew with Henson, and obviously we're league champions, which is brilliant. You can hear the crowd singing, and obviously we were still playing. I know we got a penalty in the last minute. Luckily, it didn't matter that we missed it or anything. So obviously at the final whistle, we could obviously celebrate together. We weren't waiting around anything. But the scenes on the pitch were brilliant, in the changing room, in the clubhouse after. There was a lot of emotional people, you know, especially the older kind of fan base. You know, they were really, really emotional because they'd gone through such a lot. And it was just a fantastic day for everybody. And there's a few sore heads on Sunday morning, I can assure you.
And you had a great career as a player as well, you know, Oxford United, Coventry City, Brighton Hope. I mean, players always say, oh, you know, going to management is the next best thing, and I still miss playing. How did it rate as a manager being able to, you know, wrapping up the title so early, being at home when you find out? I mean, as days, have you had many better?
No, not really. I mean, tongue in cheek, I had a sort of interview with Brighton & Hove Albion yesterday on their website, and I said I had a pretty boring career, to be perfectly honest. Yes, I had it's a fantastic career. You know, I lived the dream, played over nearly 400 games from the Championship to League Two. But I never got promoted, never got relegated. Obviously, we had a couple of close moments going both ways. But, you know, pretty boring career, really, in terms of winning anything. So to go into management a full season, win the league and get promoted, you know, it is probably the best achievement of my career. And as I said before, as a player, you're pretty selfish. You have to be selfish. You know, it's your career at the end of the day. No one's going to look after it for you. You've got to produce on the football pitch to earn that contract. Yes, you're a team player, but you have to look after yourself. Where, as a manager, you've got the kind of expectation on your shoulders of players, of staff, of volunteers, of supporters, board members, the community. You know, so when that final whistle went on Saturday, or when we heard the Coville result, it was a massive sense of relief that we'd delivered, you know, for them people. And it's definitely my greatest achievement, and you know, because it made so many people happy, and you know, long may continue. Hopefully, you know, I'll go on to have a successful management career as well.
And here's all of us. Andy Wing, it's always a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and enjoy the rest of the season.
Will do. Thank you for having me on. Cheers.
So let's round off this week's news. Time to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers once again. A welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Executive Editor at the Non-League Paper, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Thank you very much, Tim. How are we?
I'm good. I'm experiencing one of these, like, I feel like I'm in probably most of our audience won't remember Flash Gordon, but it's like I'm getting hailstorms, sunshine and everything here. It's like, is it really nearly the end of the season? It feels like February still to me, both in terms of games and terms of weather.
It's bizarre, isn't it? I mean, I think sort of last week topped it off, didn't we? We just had a week of lovely sunshine, and then it goes and snows on us on a Saturday as well. All the bad weather always happens on a Saturday, so at Non-League Towers, we're always looking out the window and thinking, "Oh no, yeah, what's whatever next?" You know,
trying to plan ahead for all those games that may or may not take place. Hopefully, we'll get all these games underway now. Speaking with Matt last week, we touched upon the legal minefield that is Staines Town last week. And I said, you know, the biggest thing is that non-league needs to come out of it better. And I think, you know, there's still much going on at Staines. But there's some good news this week is that the club, led in much part to Mr. Staines himself, the secretary there, Steve Parsons, they look like they're going to at least finish this season. That they travelled to Uxbridge as planned in the Isthmian League this weekend, and then there's some neighbourly support from Bedfont Sports supplying their ground to get Staines' home fixtures played, apart from the final game on the 23rd of April, I believe, still to be fixed up, find a home for. But it's just nice to see that the non-league community rally round, and football, hopefully, will be the winner at the end of it.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? I mean, it's a very, very messy situation down at Staines. It's also a very sad situation. I remember not so long ago going down to Staines with the team that I was covering at the time, Farnborough, and almost in awe of just how well run the club was. And you know, and Farnborough have had their problems over the years, and they were there was almost a jealousy just how great the Staines setup was, and under the Boons, and you know, that seems like a long time ago now. But I mean, the story was very, very uncomfortable reading last week, wasn't it? With the talk of the row and between the club and the landlords, and some of the accusations that was firing over, and it was just so messy. But it's great that it's great that they have the opportunity to see the season out, not only for the players and the manager, but for people like Steve Parsons, who says Steve's been involved in the club for a long, long time. He's a really, really nice guy and as good a club man as you could expect to get to find in non-league. And you know, for people like him, you know, it's great that, you know, at least they can see the season out and hopefully start afresh again next year. Even at the level they're going to be at, I don't think that matters to them. They just want a football club and a team to be able to support. And you know, I just hope that something can be done long term to help those fans achieve that.
Yeah, indeed. And it was messy and it wasn't great to see, but it does highlight that sometimes we get carried away with what goes on the field and forget about the difficulties that clubs have off the field. And you know, each club's got six different circumstances. Yeah, and the subject of politics always comes into it, and off the field arguments. It was an interesting exchange of statements. Again, it seemed to all take place on social media this week, down at Step 5 in the Western League, when Keynsham Town basically refused to make the trip down to Mousel in Cornwall due to the costs that they previously incurred in an earlier late postponement. And it's just, I know that these things need to be aired, and people need to have their grievances and have the possibility to solve problems. But airing your your dirty washing in public, if that's still a phrase that we can use, is it does leave a little bit of a sour taste in your mouth as a non-league fan.
It does, yeah, it does. But I was actually fascinated by that Kingston story. I'd reading their statement, and they were saying that, you know, that it would cost them over £2,000 to play it, and you know, and they're actually closer to Manchester than they were to Mousel. And I looked at, oh, that can't be right. And I looked at the map, and they are closer to Manchester than they are where they're due to play their midweek game, which is bizarre. So yes, I do have sympathy for them, of course. But as you say, I mean, they've aired their dirty washing in public. I think in recognition to try and drum up some support.
Yeah.
But I mean, they knew this was going to happen. They could see this happening long before it did. I feel sorry for Marisol. They're going for the title, and all of a sudden now a key game is up in the air.
Well, that's my big concern. That was my big concern, particularly with the Steyn story, is that what we don't want, particularly on the back of the two seasons that we had, we don't want the league tables being decided by a committee behind closed doors.
No, that's right. That's right. And I think it's vital, sort of, whatever league, it all seems to be one situation, doesn't it? Sort of going on into the summer, which is a will they, won't they? But I didn't think this year. I thought, touch wood, I thought we actually might have a year where it will be decided on the pitch. And all was going well until this Keynsham story and this Steyn story come up. And I just hope that these clubs and league officials and all have the right foresight, really, to come together to reach the right decision. What's going to happen with Keynsham, I don't know. It's the Western League is obviously is quite drawn out geographically due to the number of the lack of clubs they have at that level. And what can be done about it, to be honest, I don't really know. But
I use the analogy with somebody this week, and you know, I feel sympathy for both parties on this, but it's a bit like going to a pub and then complaining that the beers are more expensive than you're expecting, because like you said, you know, everybody knew that this was something was gonna come to a head here, and I think it's just the way it's happened. And again, like from the, you know, our COVID times, I just hope, like yourself, that everybody learns from it, and we, you know, so it maybe is we have to relook at all the geographical stuff again, not quite sure, unless they move Cornwall round, snap it off the end of the country and bolt it onto the end of Dorset. I'm not sure what really happens there, but we need to take some key findings from these and sort of move forward. I mean, one other thing, you know, talking from about committees this week, we did have more details this week released on the playoffs that are going to occur between those at the bottom of step four and the top of step five, and also how the step six playoffs are going to work. There's still, I guess, not a great deal of clarity, of course, until all the leagues are concluded and we know who are going to be taking part in this, and then, you know, who will play who and where that will take place. But I suppose at least it looks like there's going to be only six of these playoffs now between steps four and step five places. They're going to be one-off games, extra time, penalty kicks if required, and on that final weekend of April coming into May. So there's some sort of certainty there.
That's right. Yeah, personally, I think these playoffs are great. I think they
used to have to. I'm not sort of making this up, but there used to be some playoffs along these sort of lines. It does keep. We know how the playoffs keep things alive at the top of the table, and it would also, you know, it would stop you resigning yourself to a horrible season. You might have some success at the end of the season. I remember Hazen-Yedden, we got red. Got relegated, but we also won the League Cup. It was a weird season, but it, as a fan, you still had something to celebrate, and these playoffs appear to give that opportunity.
That's right. I mean, I think at all levels, I've always been a big advocate that, you know, a playoff should possibly be between the team third bottom of the league above and the team third or the winning playoff team in the league below. I think it's ideal, because I think if you can beat that team in the league above you, then you deserve your place in that division. And I think it works really well. But where what's disappointing is the point that you alluded to, and that was, it was just the timing of it. You know, but we're now in mid, coming up mid-April, and there's still uncertainty. You think, surely we could have got our heads together a little bit before that, maybe even a new year, and just say, right, this is happening, bang, 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 bang. And at least we know where we all stand. And as it is, you know, we're still talking about it in April. But hopefully it'll all sort itself out. And I think we could be on some real big games. I mean, the crowds at that level in recent weeks have been unbelievable. You know, some step four or five teams with four-figure crowds, which is incredible. And, you know, so hopefully we can get a nice big interstep game on, probably on a bank holiday Monday or whatever it is, or whatever, and get a real big crowd through the gate. I think that'd be great for the game.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, John. I mean, from my playing days are well and truly over, and have been for a long time, but I've still got some bits of plastic on the shelf or in a drawer somewhere that shows I won something, or I was at least a runner-up in something. And one of the interesting things that I saw from this step four, step five release of the update of the rules. So we had some rules, and then there's some other bits that have been added in some red ink to say, no, these bits are changed because of certain things. And so from these playoff games, it's a share gate like you would normally with a cup game, but 12.5% of that share gate goes to the league. One of the things that has come from these announcement of the update in the rules this week, there's that no trophies or medals will be provided by the association. Now, I don't know whether that means that the FA aren't going to provide them, or that no league's going to play them. And it just seems, you know, if there's money that's not going to the clubs, then at least whoever's organising it, there should be, I'm not saying that we all need greatest disco dancer certificates, but as a player, if you won that playoff, you'd like to think you're going to get something, even if it's a bit of plastic at the end of it.
Yeah, 100%. I don't honestly see where that 12.5% is going. If it was to give a medal for each player, I think everyone would applaud that. But no, I don't get it personally. The cynic in me will say it's another money making ploy. I'd like to think that we're a bit beyond that these days, and you know, we're just out to just want to enjoy our football. But I personally like to see the winning team on a big occasion. If it is going to be played in front of a nice big crowd, you know, that's a moment in their careers that they'll never forget. Would it really harm to get them all a medal and a little cup of blah blah playoff winners 2021-22? No, not for me. I don't see why not at all.
Yeah. Well, hopefully there's still time to go, as we've said. You know, there might be something in the offing, but certainly from reading the rules that came out this week, it doesn't appear that's in the thinking at the moment. Elsewhere, we've seen the managerial merry-go-round. There's a fair few been falling at near the final hurdle this last week. Notable ones, I see John Coventry and Great Wakering Rovers are party company this week. And a very interesting change at Ramsgate in the playoff positions at Step 4 in the Eastman South East Division. But Matt Longhurst has stepped down as manager, and coming in until the end of the season is the very experienced Steve Lovell, who obviously started this season in charge at Welling, and then only a few months back was the caretaker boss at Gillingham in the Football League.
That's right, he was managing up until January 31st, I think it was. Managing with Gillingham, the club where he's best known, and it was only well, he was there working under Steve Evans. No, coming in as a caretaker, didn't he, after Steve Evans left, and then left when before Neil Harris came in. So, I mean, he's a real good guy to have. And I was looking at some quotes this week from the owner and the chairman, who was delighted to get someone of the name of Steve Lovell through the gate, especially at this late juncture. They're right in the mix for promotion in Isthmian Southeast. I know they lost the last four games, which is why the previous manager left. But what an opportunity for Steve Lovell to make a name for himself and make himself into an instant club legend if he can get Ramsgate up. It's been a long time since Ramsgate have played at that level. Obviously, they've got their big rivals Margate in the Premier Division. That'll be a nice big game for them to enjoy if they can get over the line. And with a man like Steve Lovell in charge, they've got every chance.
Yeah, a massive game for them though. Ramsgate fifth, and they're entertaining this weekend in the league. Steve Lovell's first game in charge. Haywards Heath Town, who are fourth. As you say, this is where legends are made. And talking about legends, we touched upon last week Darren Stile coming in down at Woking, moving from Yeovil and going in at Woking, and he had an impact immediately at the weekend with victory at Boreham Wood, who are themselves on a seven-game slump since that defeat in the FA Cup to Everton.
He did. What a big win that was in front of the TV cameras at Boreham Wood. I think I read somewhere that Wrexham and Boreham Wood have only lost one game at home all season, and both of them are now to Darren Sowell's sides, which is quite a nice stat. I'll be honest with you, I was actually quite surprised by this. I think it was more so what Darren Sowell said about the bridging the gap between the top six. And he also runs, and I really can't see for the life of me, unless I'm missing something at Yeovil completely, why Woking would be in a better position to bridge that gap than Yeovil. Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe there's something going on behind the scenes that I'm not a party to. I know it's not the happiest of camps for the last couple of years, but no, fair play to me. I mean, he's made his big move. I know, obviously, he's a Stevenage boy beforehand, so maybe it's a geographical thing as well. And but what a start, and what a great appointment for Woking, who all of a sudden now have big ambition in their eyes, don't they? They're talking about a big summer, and it's at the end of their first year as a full-time club, and things are certainly looking up for them. And and who would have thought that the week that they parted company with Alan Dowson, which I'm still amazed about now, to be fair. But fair play to Darren Sowell. I just hope that if there is something afoot at Yeovil, that it gets sorted out. It's given Charlie Lee a good opportunity to stake a claim for himself, and I think he's going to be in there to the end of the season. They've got nothing to play for this year, so it's a nice free run for him. So hopefully he can stake a claim for something a bit more permanent down there.
Indeed, and talking of Alan Dowson, it was nice to bump into him Farnborough against Hazen Yedding at the weekend. I think a little bit shell shocked by his departure at Woking, but good to see him back in the fold around non-league people and enjoying a game of football as well. Not that it was a great game to enjoy, to be honest, but one of those. But it's certainly not nice to hear the cackle of an Alan Dowson. After a few weeks, anyway. While we're talking about looking forward to the summer, I should mention obviously Sunday, May the 22nd at Wembley, non-league finals day, because we've got Newport Bagnall Town taking on Littlehampton Town in the Vars now, and also know that Bromley are going to play Wrexham in the trophy. I understand kickoff times haven't been announced yet, but the tickets should go on sale on Monday, the 11th of April. I'm expecting a bumper crowd there this season with those sides have already, gained great support across the competition and in their league campaigns this season. But it's also a great opportunity for non-league neutrals to, come together, celebrate the day after a couple of tough seasons for non-league fans. Always a good day out.
That's right. I mean, I think this year in particular, I think with the presence of Wrexham, who I've always had a huge fan base, and obviously we've got the interest of the Hollywood boys. That's where all the glare of the cameras are going to be at. I'm expecting them to bring down big numbers. And at the same time, I also, it wasn't so long ago that I watched Bromley play Brackley in the final of the trophy, and Bromley brought down nearly 20,000 fans themselves. So, I mean, real scope for a big, big crowd at Wembley. Obviously, the FA Vars boys, they're both looking at history as well. Mm. So hopefully they can reach out to their communities and bring down as many people as possible, because it promises to be another great day at Wembley. It's a non-league finals day is one of my favourite days of the year. It's a long day for a journalist, mind you. But it's thoroughly enjoyable. Two cracking games of football. And it's all under one roof, and all for one ticket price, and you can't go wrong with that. And so I say, get yourself down there. It promises to be a great day for a neutral, or if you're lucky enough to have your club there, it's a great day.
It is indeed. And Wrexham, obviously, they got the psychological blow in the trophy last weekend over Stockport, and then followed that up midweek with a National League, 6-0 drubbing of Barnet to keep up the pressure. But I do wonder if it's still too late. Stockport are the evening game this weekend, so Wrexham can technically close that gap to, close it down to 5 points, I think. Too late for the title, though. I certainly wouldn't want to face them in the playoffs, the sort of form they're in.
No, you certainly wouldn't. Personally, yes, I think. I just can't see Stockport losing 8 points. Mm. As much as I'd like to see a big title shootout, obviously Easter's going to be vital, but I personally can't see Stockport doing that. I think Wrexham may have left it a little bit late, but then again, it's all down to Dave Challoner and his Stockport boys, who have been phenomenal this year. Ever since the turn of the year, they've been absolutely imperious. And but Wrexham now are really turning the screw. It's like two sixes in the last couple of weeks. They're scoring from all over the pitch, from six different goal scorers on Tuesday night, so they're confident and they're really up for it. And as you say, who's going to want to play Wrexham in the playoffs? Not many. Personally, I think at the moment they are the two best teams in the league, and I'd love to see them go up. But playoffs are a little bit not quite as straightforward as that, are they? And there's always going to be a team that will surprise you along the line. I wouldn't write off Chesterfield yet. I know they're not going through the greatest of patches at the moment, but they've got a big gun manager, and they've got some big game players. I think they're going to be thereabouts, and Notts County as well. Notts County, they're easy to write off, but the likes of Ruben Rodriguez scoring his hat trick last week, that was a big statement. I think that that their best player is banging form, and he can win a game on his own. So, it promises to be a real cracking final month.
Yeah, and those final places for the playoffs are still definitely up for grabs. Three or four clubs still hoping to maybe just nip in at the last moment there. I mean, we always talk about the top of the table, and I'd almost written off the bottom of the table, to be fair, several weeks ago, but it might have gone unnoticed. It hasn't by me, for sure. Tommy Widrington are certainly getting his King's Lynn side running through walls. It wins over playoff chasers at Halifax and this week Bromley as well. It's got to put them up in the form table, but it's certainly snapping at the heels of Aldershot just above them in that final relegation zone.
Yeah, it certainly hasn't gone unnoticed by me, or indeed anyone at Aldershot, believe me. Aldershot were the team I used to cover, so they're a team I've got a very close affinity to. up until a couple of months ago, they had a great season. They were, I think they were 16 points clear of relegation zone, and they were already looking at sort of how they can build for next season, and then it just completely hit the buffers. I think they got 1 point out of a possible 24, in which time they've only scored 3 goals. Mark Mulsey there has lost some key players, loanies that have gone back, and he hasn't been able to replace them, especially in the final third. And there's a lot of Aldershot fans out there very, very worried, because they're looking behind them, and they're looking at a King's Lynn team who are really on the crest of a wave at the moment under their new manager, Tommy Widdrington. I mean, the win over Bromley on Tuesday night apparently was very thoroughly deserved, and Aldershot got some big games coming up. They got Bournemouth on Saturday, who are out of winning 7 themselves, so that's a real big game, and I think that's going to be a real slog for them. But Aldershot need to find something from somewhere, because King's Lynn, the way they're going, will catch them, and I think we could be on for a very nerve-wracking final couple of weeks of the season.
Which is great from a neutral, but if you're a Mulsey or an Aldershot fan, it's not the run into the summer that you're expecting. But before I let you go, John, one thing that we missed out last week because of the way it came out in the show was the list of intermediary fees from February 21 to January 22 across the National League system. So, but basically, every week we celebrate the quality of the game in non-league, but then when I look and we see, well, over £500,000 going out of our game at our level to agents in just a single year, you have to question whether that makes good business sense.
That's right. I mean, it was quite an eye-opener, really, wasn't it? When you look at the amount that Stockport, £130,000.
Very good, agents, yeah.
It's incredible, really. So £500,000 from non-league football, that would have been unheard of a few years ago. I was looking at Stockport's figures, and there were more than any other League Two team, and there was pretty much mid-table really in League One. Mm. So that's where they've obviously gone out and they've made their status known, and obviously with the big guys like Wrexham and Chesterfield have also chipped in with 50,000 each, I think. Notts County as well. It's just the way the game's going. I think I'm in the wrong game, Tim, to be fair.
Well, there was a time when I was a young lawyer that was looking for to branch out into something else, and I thought, shall I be a football agent? And I thought, no, there's no future in that. And now there's you and I talking on a Thursday afternoon about non-league football still, John. But hey, we enjoy our lives and we enjoy having you on the non-league football show. Anything else we can expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Put me on the spot now. We've got a nice piece with Sean Densmore. Sean Densmore is an Altrincham legend who's being given a testimonial by the club. Matt is talking to Sean Densmore as we speak, I think, actually. And so hopefully we'll get a nice tale from him. We're going to look at the FA Vars finalists and reaction to what was a massive weekend for them. And just sort of looking ahead to the Easter, where there's going to be some big games coming up and lots of things decided. So yeah, it's a busy time, but as you say, it's the best time of the year for me. Easter, talking about non-league football, there's so much going on, and these next 9 days or so, a bit more than that, so 9 to 11 days. Building up to Easter Monday, that's where it's all going to be decided. And can't wait. It'll be great to see what happens.
It will be. And we look forward to reading all about it in this weekend's non-league paper. John Couch, thanks for joining us on the non-league football
thanks
show.
Thanks very much.
And that is it for this week. Thank you, as ever, to all of my guests and for everybody that does listen. And please do share it with your friends. Let them know that we're still here and building again for next year. Before I go, though, I just want to thank Peter Miller, who can be found on Twitter at PeterMiller36. I want to thank him for his continued hard work and efforts in keeping the non-league promotion and relegation Google sheet up to date. We love to celebrate the great people in non-league, and he really is an unsung hero for all us journalists, for managers, players and fans alike of the non-league game, especially as the season now draws to a close and we need to know those points per game, who's in the relegation spots, who's in the promotion spots, and who might not even be taking part any longer. So a very big hat tip to Peter Miller, and do please give him a follow and a thanks on Twitter at PeterMiller36. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. And you can find us every week on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe. Enjoy your football. Thank you and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber production. J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.